This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 250. Today, AC and I are going to talk about a bunch of announcements from Microsoft's Build Conference 2018 and some other news, recorded live 3rd of May 2018.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
You in the bathroom, AC?
No, I was just taking a drink of water.
How you doing?
I thought I had enough time to get that one down.
If I didn't hear a flush in the background, I would have hung up.
No. I'm good. I'm not in my normal spot tonight. So, or I guess today. Well, yes, tonight.
You're not making the story any better.
No, I'm not. I'm tired. It's been a long week.
you've been on the road a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a busy 2 weeks. Missed you last week. I did the show. I interviewed the guys from Microsoft and HashiCorp last week about Terraform, which that was a lot of fun. You get a chance to listen to that one yet?
I did. I actually listened to it today in the car on the way to work, and it was awesome. I really liked it.
It was really good. I got off that call with them, and I was like, man, that was a lot of fun. That's some really cool tech.
I came away with, I don't know, this would be interesting to see my take on it from your perspective, but I came away with it feeling like, even if you're not a cloud infrastructure person, it's still for you because you can use it for, I don't know, building up your own dev workstation and deploying a bunch of things that way. Like there's a whole ton of different use cases for it in that respect.
There really is. When you look at all the providers that they have, I mean, it was pretty darn impressive how long of a list there was. But yeah, I think the thing that really got me for it was that I've heard of Terraform. I know that Terraform was pretty popular around AWS, but you could tell that this was really a play by Microsoft to work with HashiCorp to make it easier for people to lift and come right over to Azure and not just be stuck on another platform or something, but make it easier, make Azure. You don't have to learn the ARM, you know, model of doing stuff. You could use HashiCorp and let them go through and do it for you. I thought it was really cool. I really liked the aspect of being able to use their tool to point at your infrastructure in Azure and be able to have put your infrastructure in source control.
Like reverse engineer it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And track changes and all that stuff. That's what was one really cool use case that I liked.
Yeah. I can definitely see why Microsoft would be keen on it, right? The easier they can make it for customers to migrate between different cloud providers, they'll win a lot of business that way. Yep. So yeah, I could definitely see why it's in their vested interest, I should say, to make that as seamless as possible. Hey, yep. But we all benefit from it, right? So that's really nice.
Yeah. So that was the one thing, but I think there was the last week has been just crazy for me. I was at a small business conference out in Las Vegas for the first part of this week, a little conference called MicroConf, which is, well, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a bunch of small business people, solo entrepreneurs that are just getting together and inspiration, but also tactics and all that to help you grow. And I've been going for a couple of years and it's really, really beneficial. But while I'm out there, I'm also trying to publish and ship two more chapters to my course. So I got a chapter on jQuery and a chapter on React is now part of the Mastering the SharePoint Framework course. And the best part of the conference when you go to it is not just picking up new tactics, but it's things that you have in your head, things that you have like ideas and concepts and plans you have in your head, and being with really smart people that you really appreciate, and then having those people challenge your current way of thinking.
Yeah, gotcha.
And getting you to come around to a different way of thinking. And so they've done, I think I found two people that I'm going to hire to help me with some stuff and change the direction on a few things. So this time I did that conference. I thought ahead and planned for a 1 day flight coming home and then 2 days of a retreat. It's just before you go home, before you go back to family and everything, it's hard to really get focused. And so it was, I went instead of, I fly into Jacksonville and I usually drive an hour south, I drove an hour north and I went to a little place called Amelia Island in Florida, which just a little Airbnb, cheap Airbnb where I'm sitting on the beach. And
that's so cool.
I spent all day.
It's like a personal debrief on the event, right? You can sit there, no interruptions, get it all down on paper or make your notes or all that, or action your notes that you took while it's still all really fresh and you come away really pumped up before you get into the sort of rigmarole of daily life, so to speak.
Yeah, my day consisted of, so for me, therapy is sitting on the beach and looking at the horizon. That's where I get my creativity. And it's a private beach, so there's very little traffic, very little foot traffic on the beach or anything. So my day consisted of starting at about 7 o'clock this morning, going down to the beach with a towel, a beach chair, and my iPad. And I think I went back and forth from the condo I'm renting down to the beach about six times today. And it was just to get another water bottle and use the restroom and go back down to the beach.
Nice.
I burned through my iPad battery twice today. I had my Omnicharm charged with me down there and blew through that. I got a ton of stuff done. So I'm mentally pretty close to being fried. And
yeah, I bet.
You and I had challenge getting together this week. So we were recording at about 11 o'clock my time. So
PM. 11 p.m. Yeah.
PM. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so wild.
How about you? What have you been up to?
Well, summer has finally arrived in Seattle, and so it's beautiful weather and things. I've been going for nice long walks along the Kirkland waterfront for my one-on-ones with my team and things, so it's been really nice, actually. But, yeah, we're getting a bunch of stuff done in Hyperfish, obviously, and really all guns blazing for the SharePoint conference North America that's coming up. So we have a bunch of SPFX stuff that we're doing for that, amongst other things. Teams-specific stuff as well, so we're just finishing up all that stuff and getting ready to roll it all out. And then I have Build next week, obviously. So I'll be at Build conference. We're going to talk a bunch about some of the news that's coming out there in this show. But yeah, I'll be at Build in person, and I'll be at the podcast center for quite a few interviews with various people through the week. So I think I've got six interviews lined up, something like that. It's a couple.
Oh, fantastic.
Quite a lot. I actually don't know who they're with yet. There's quite a lot going on with the podcast center scheduling. So apparently I was talking to Richard Campbell today, who's helping organize the podcast center from the .NET Rocks podcast. And we were laughing because the schedule got completely thrown into disarray today due to a couple of guest schedule requirements, I guess to call it, something like that. Anyway, yes, it's all quite up in the air at this stage. There's nothing quite like a conference, like one that comes in with its eyebrows on fire. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
No kidding, man. No kidding. Yeah, speaking of all that stuff.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvPoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire sites. AvPoint can run backups up to four times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvPoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Build, and we've got some news, but today you managed to get in on a briefing for Build where it was announced some of the announcements they've been making at the Build conference. And given our show is coming out on Tuesday afternoon, we're actually going to hold the show a little longer than we normally do to make sure that we don't break any NDAs or embargoes.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. As part of recording this show. So, yeah, we thought we'd go through some of what was talked about or coming out of Build for everybody. And then depending on the amount of time that we've got left, we've got a ton of different news items and things like that that we've been holding on to for the last couple of weeks that we'll dive into. But I guess why don't you kick things off with just sort of explaining roughly what you heard today and kind of, you know, where you think things are heading.
Absolutely, yeah. So like you said, I sat in a pre-briefing earlier today or earlier tonight. And it's really the kind of giving like media a bit of a heads up on what's going to be announced so that you can kind of be a little ready for some positioning stuff that's coming. But
yeah,
I don't really know exactly how it's announced. So like you said, we recorded this the week before Build, or at the very end of the week before Build. As you are hearing this right now in your ears, everything has been announced by now. And so what I say may be a little bit off in terms of how they phrased things. You know, we'd love to be able to do a little bit more real time, but in this case, we're not. We're definitely going to follow it up, because we'll definitely cover some of it. We got a bunch of interviews, like you said, that you're doing next week. We'll cover it then. But there were a handful of really big topics, main precept topics that are going to be covered, or that are covered at Build. One of them is around dev tools and DevOps. One is around containers and serverless. One is around data. One is around Internet of Things. And one is around artificial intelligence. Now, because we're the Microsoft Cloud Show, and because we stick mostly with the Office 365 and the Azure side, some of this stuff I'm going to kind of punt a bit, because I don't really think it fits into what you and I are covering on the show. I mean, I'll say some things really quick. There's some stuff around Visual Studio and dev tools. Like, there's Visual Studio Live. We saw, I think it was back at Connect, when you could see with Visual Studio Code how you could do like paired programming kind of thing. Yeah. That's coming to Visual Studio as well. I think they're calling it Live Share, and it's going to be available in like a public preview as a build, when Build comes out. They have another thing called Visual Studio IntelliCode, not IntelliSense, but IntelliCode. And it's, think like better context aware of code completions and guiding developers to code using patterns that are in styles that their teams use, finds difficult to catch code issues, focusing on code review stuff. I'm not entirely clear what it is, but it looks like it's kind of using artificial intelligence and machine language. Or machine learning to we're just going to throw a bunch of ones and zeros in your Visual Studio code files.
So I'm guessing it's kind of like an AI version of FXCop.
It seems like that. It seems a little bit like that. That was glossed over pretty quickly. There's another cool thing that is coming for all of you that like to play with small things and do mobile development. There is... Sorry.
Seriously? You know I can't take things like that, AC.
I thought I'd be able to keep a straight face through that, and then all of a sudden you started busting out laughing. This is when the downside of video kicks in.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right. So there's a partnership between Microsoft and GitHub. So you familiar with something called Visual Studio App Center?
Vaguely.
It's my understanding, it's the thing that they got from the Xamarin acquisition. Yes. With all the big testing of all the mobile apps.
Yeah. So like what they're big suite, you can deploy your app across lots of different things and test it out. Yep.
Yeah. Against lots of small things.
mobile things. Yeah.
So anyway, they have there's integration now with Visual Studio App Center and GitHub, so that if you have your code in GitHub and you're building mobile apps like iOS and Android, then you can take advantage of some of the CI stuff that we have inside of Visual Studio App Center, so that when you do a push over to something in GitHub or a PR to something in GitHub, it'll automatically send that stuff over to App Center for automatic testing and everything.
Oh, that's kind of nice. So it's not just to VSTS anymore? Oh, gosh. Oh, this is all turning to custard. I don't know. Oh, no. Now we're in the... AC's lost the plot and is laughing his head off, and I can't help but follow along mode. Oh, this is terrible. Should I just take over? Nobody kidding.
Why don't we move on to containers?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Sorry about that. Anyways, that was just some of the dev stuff. That was just some of the dev stuff. And that integration between Visual Studio and GitHub, my understanding is it really only applies to mobile dev. Now, let's talk about containers. I know. Wait for it. We have a product name change. Microsoft never does this.
Oh,
and I'm always cool with this, right?
Uh-oh. Please don't tell me it's AKS.
It's AKS.
Oh, no.
Okay, this one actually makes sense. Okay. So AKS today is Azure Container Service, right?
Correct.
Okay, but don't they already have an Azure Container Service?
Well, they do, but they're getting rid of that.
Well, no, they're not.
Yeah, well, they've already had the deprecation notice up on the ACS website for a while.
Okay, so... Okay, so it wasn't
AKS
very clear.
Is really, the K is Kubernetes, right? Because it's a play on container, but it's Kubernetes under the hood, right? So it's a Kubernetes service. And then ACS, there's a deprecation notice up that says as soon as AKS GAs, they're going to start the clock on the ACS deprecation.
So that's going to be interesting to see how that goes, because the way that they explained it tonight was that ACS, Azure Container Service, where you manage your Kubernetes instance, is still going to live. It's still going to continue on.
Interesting. Maybe they've changed their minds.
Because they've changed the name of that AKS now stands for the Azure Kubernetes Service. So AKS is truly, it's no longer like this weird like Azure Container Service. The K is really a C. Now it's real Azure Kubernetes Service is AKS, which is the managed version of Kubernetes.
Okay, so we keep the acronym.
We keep the acronym. The name now matches the acronym.
Okay.
And my understanding is that Azure Container Service is going to stick around. The deprecation thing, I can't comment to that. But it sounded like that was going to keep. I can't speak. I can't comment officially to that from what they said. But my understanding was that was going to continue, so that you could still use ACS to create your own Kubernetes cluster, but it was you managed it versus having a managed version that Microsoft did for you.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Well, no, that does make a bit of sense, right? Because AKS and people are like, what? You mean ACS? No, it's the container service, it's KS, but there's also a container service. But anyway. Yeah,
it was a play on the whole thing. There's a bunch there's a bunch of other stuff that they're doing too with this that all sounds really cool. So, and it all comes out to one big bit of news here. Most of these things are surrounded by infrastructure and dev updates. So in terms of the infrastructure stuff, there's going to be support for VNets, the number one requested feature around AKS.
Yep.
They're also adding support for deeper App Insights integration to be able to see what's going on inside of your AKS cluster, both from the host and from within the container itself. They're also, now this one, I think I understand what they were saying here, and this is one of those classic, like when you get a pre-briefing where it's more like a bullet point, and someone's reading from, not so much reading from a slide, but they're just reading their notes, and it didn't get any more elaborate into this, but it sounds really promising. They're called dev spaces, and they're going to be announced in preview mode, and effectively what it sounds like they're doing is it's, you know how like Visual Studio?
I know this.
You do? Okay.
Yeah. I was in on the naming for this.
Okay.
Not when I was at Microsoft, but more recently, because there's a group I belong to and they send surveys out to, and this was the, we got involved in the naming of this thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the one where you can have where Visual Studio can do live development, live debugging inside of a web app. This is like the same thing, but now you can do it with inside of a container.
Yeah, that's right. So you can connect up your Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code up to an AKS cluster that's running in Azure. And you can be building and deploying your app and, you know, in containers as a developer in real time, you know, as you're writing the code changes and everything. Everything's all being packaged and built and sent up to the AKS cluster seamlessly, but it's also partitioned as your space in that AKS cluster.
Right.
So that, say, you were developing and I was developing, we're not stomping on each other because we each get our own space.
Right, right. It's like we get our own little namespaces in a way.
Correct, yeah. And I suspect they're using Kubernetes namespacing, do it behind the scenes.
Yeah. So that was another big bit. And then the last big thing that they had around the containers and Kubernetes stuff is that, actually there was more now that I think about it, but they are going to announce in coming weeks the GA of AKS.
Ah!
And
it's an announcement for an announcement?
Yeah, it's an announcement for an announcement. And I wasn't clear if this is an announcement that's going to be for an announcement or if it was actually an announcement for today. You know what I mean? They're announcing, well, a private preview for Windows containers on AKS.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, so Windows worker nodes. Yeah, you can do it with ACS today, I believe, is my understanding, or ACS Engine, which is the engine that is used to stamp out the ARM templates that build your ACS clusters. You can do Windows worker nodes on those today, I believe. So that's nice that they're bringing those to AKS. It's kind of cool.
Yep.
Really
they,
cool.
They also have a couple other things too around in the category of serverless and data is that some stuff around Cosmos DB. Mm-hmm. Cosmos DB is going to have multi-master support launched in a private preview at a global scale with low latency and high availability. It is also going to have the GA support for general availability of VNet support for a private and secure gateway into Cosmos DB is another big one.
That's been asked for a long time.
Yep. And that's going to go GA. And then they're also doing, and this one, I wasn't clear exactly what this was. I think I know what it is, but I don't want to say too much because I'm not sure I exactly understand it. So let me just read from my notes, which was, the provisioning of throughput for a set of containers goes in public preview to bring the business model in line with industry standards for NoSQL databases.
So they're going to charge you for throughput and bandwidth.
It's not only throughput and bandwidth, but also that you can actually limit it to a container. or to a set of containers. Not container like we talked about a second ago with Kubernetes, but a container inside, you know, Cosmos DB or NoSQL DB is a little bit different.
Oh, interesting.
Also some stuff around Azure Blockchain. There's a new workbench that's going to enable a little bit, make it a little bit easier for you to do development, to spin up an environment and everything, and to kind of guide you along with some dev tools, Visual Studio. But blockchain stuff I kind of tuned out a little bit on. There's a lot of stuff around IoT as well. I'm not as familiar in the IoT stuff, but there's really came out to a couple key things. There's some hardware partnerships between like Qualcomm, Microsoft, and the DJI.
Yep.
And then they're also doing some stuff where they're putting some of the artificial intelligence and machine learning stuff out onto the IoT edge so that you're going to be able to use some of the cognitive services, API, some of the services and some of the APIs out at the IoT edge so that you don't have to bring everything inside of Azure to do all of this work. Some stuff can actually live, like be done more locally by drones or a little bit closer to like the IoT devices.
I'm guessing this is kind of in cahoot with Azure Sphere. You know, the new Linux distro and chip design for IoT devices that Microsoft came out with. I covered it on a solo on the news show, yes, show before last, and it sounds like they're recovering some of that ground and also announcing some new things there.
Yeah, and those announcements I just mentioned are IoT and the hardware partnerships. That's not going to be, those things are not available at build. Those things are going to happen anywhere from the summer of 2018 through later on this year.
Gotcha.
There is another thing, though, that it's not, it fell in the container space, but it doesn't fall in the container space, which is, it's a little weird, but I thought this one was a pretty big deal because there are a couple announcements that are being made at build that are distinguishing Azure from the other public clouds. So one of them, Scott Guthrie, is going to be a busy boy. He's going to do a keynote on day one at build, and then he's going to run over to KubeCon and do a keynote with Brendan Burns at day two of build, but it's going to be at KubeCon.
Where is KubeCon this year, do you know?
I'm guessing it's in Seattle. It was in Seattle last time, but I'm not entirely, I don't know.
At the same time as build, huh?
It's the same time as build, which is also the same time as Google I.O.
Oh, so, curious.
Yeah, so get this. Microsoft and OpenShift, or Red Hat, are announcing at the Red Hat Summit next week, the week of May the 8th, that there is going to be the first jointly managed OpenShift offering will be available only on Azure as a preview. No other public cloud has that. So before, it was always OpenShift was always done by Red Hat, and it was always on-prem. Now, it's going to be managed and run by Azure. It's going to be the first fully managed public cloud instance of OpenShift, which is a pretty big deal.
That's a big deal, yeah.
That's actually going to be demoed at KubeCon the same week as build.
So it turns out KubeCon North America is in December, and that is in Seattle, but KubeCon Europe is on May 2nd to 4th, and that's in Copenhagen. So Scott's got to get from...
Wait, no, Copenhagen, that would be before build, right? Because 2nd to the 4th is today, is now.
Oh, sorry, it is too. 2nd to the 4th. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Okay, so you know what it is then? It's being announced at the Red Hat Summit. It's being announced at the Red Hat Summit on May the 8th.
Gotcha.
And that was the one why I said I didn't want to publish early on Tuesday. That's why we're going to publish Tuesday afternoon.
Gotcha. There you go.
Nice little CMA on my part. Some of the really cool things that they're talking about, the other things that they're doing here, and I'm jumping around a little bit because some of the way that things were presented to us were also jumped around a bit. Azure Container Instances, ACI, that recently went GA towards the end of April, on April the 24th, actually. So how is that different from the other container stuff we just talked about a minute ago, is that you can do AKS, which is Microsoft managing using Kubernetes to manage a Kubernetes cluster.
Yep.
And you just pay for the instances. But you still have a pre-provisioned cluster. You still have pre-provisioned resources that you've set up.
Yeah.
The difference, though, with this one, with what ACI is that ACI is, you don't have to worry about provisioning up a cluster. You just run a command on the command line and tell Azure, I need you to run this container the same way you would if you're running a Docker container on your local machine.
Yeah.
It's a great way to just to throw, you know, if you don't want to install Docker on your local machine, it's a great way to have a container just run in the cloud somewhere. And so I just want to pay for the resources I use. Sure. But it's also super useful too that you can point your AKS cluster, you can point it at ACI as being a node. And so if you have really burstable type workloads and you don't want to pre-provision resources for those burstable workloads, they could take advantage of ACI.
Yeah, the thing in the middle there is called virtual kubelet, I believe, which is like a virtual node that's connected into your it shows up as a physical node in your Kubernetes cluster,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of a bottomless pit of compute. Does that make sense?
Yeah, with that, you're not paying for it's just sitting there waiting for you to tap it.
Yeah, exactly.
You pay for what you use.
You just deploy stuff whenever you want, and you keep getting more resources, and the sort of bottomless pit of compute. Yeah,
yep.
That's really sweet. I like that.
There was another bit of container news here where the Azure App Service, they are announcing a public. So today you can do under App Service, you can do a single container inside of App Service. And what they're announcing is a public preview of multi-container support for Linux containers. And they're starting a private preview of Windows container support in Azure App Service.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah, I remember them announcing the container support a while ago, but there were limits on, the number of containers and things.
See, keeping with more of the cloudy stuff here, we have something around on serverless with Azure Functions and Event Grid. This is point number two that is unique to where Azure now has a unique position or a unique offering that no one else has. This one's actually going to be announced before Build. This is going to be announced on May the 4th, on Friday, May the 4th, with a blog post that comes out. And this is actually being demoed at KubeCon. This is the one I got confused with earlier.
Gotcha.
So first of all, there's two parts to this. Number one, they're announcing general availability of durable functions capability inside of Azure Functions. No one else is doing that. No one else is doing durable functions. So the idea behind a durable function, if I'm not mistaken, is you can have a function, an Azure function, that has a certain timeline of how long it's allowed to run before it, quote, times out, and you pay for the whole time that it's running. Durable functions, what they allow you to do is to have that function almost be the bus to fire off a bunch of async events. And then while your function, the main guy, while he's sleeping and waiting for all those other events to conclude, he can sleep for an undetermined amount of time or undefined amount of time, and you don't pay for the time that he's actually sleeping.
Yeah. I heard they've definitely talked about this before.
It's been in the works for a while, but it's going GA is the part that is Lambda doesn't do it, and Google Cloud Functions don't do this either.
Yeah, it's nice because you can have one gateway function that then calls a bunch of others that actually go do work, and things might wait on other things, but you're not paying for that. Like if you've got a long-running process, like 15 minutes or something, right? You don't want that function sitting there running, chewing all your time up and paying for it.
Yep, exactly.
So it'll go to sleep and then wake back up when the event comes back in and it reconstitutes its state and carries on like it never skipped a beat.
Yep. That's one. Another big thing too, this is another thing that is very unique to Azure. So have you heard of something called Cloud Events?
No.
So Cloud Events is an open specification for defining and describing events in a very standard way. Microsoft has been working with the guys at the Linux Foundation and the Container Initiative,
OCI, Open Container Initiative. Yeah.
They've been working with those guys. And this is going, you're now going to see is that Azure is now going to be the first public cloud to offer support for cloud events in Azure Event Grid. That announcement by the time you hear this, that announcement will already be out. That's coming out on May the 4th, and that's being demoed over at KubeCon. So that'll be a really cool announcement. There's a lot of other devy stuff that's going on, like they're going to talk about the .NET Core 3.0 roadmap. A lot of changes that they're adding to that. A preview will be available next year and GA in 2019. And then also .NET Core 2.1. So today we're at 2.0 at Build. It will go 2.1. We'll have a release candidate that will be available with a Go Live license. And ASP.NET Core 2.1 also has got significant improvements on build and runtime performance. Like from what they said, like 15 to 25% faster in 2.1 than 2.0.
Wow. Yeah, because Core is fast as it is, but that's really nice.
Yeah. A Service Fabric offering will be available in the coming weeks under public preview.
Mm-hmm.
It recently went to, was announced also as to be open sourced. And then I'll be honest, let me jump ahead. So there's two of the categories of things that were announced. I'm going to skip one of them because I'll be completely honest, I didn't understand it all. It's all around, this is Satya's part of the keynote. It's around artificial intelligence. It's around machine learning, Sacha is going to talk a lot about ethics, and then they're going to talk about all these things that they're doing with AI. Things like they're going to take all the different speech, different APIs, and they're going to unify them all together into one so they don't have so many different pieces. Hmm. They've got a bunch of Azure ML updates where they'll have learning packages. They're going to have a learning SDK for Python. Actually, a friend of mine that you know who I'm talking about, a friend of mine has, I think, has been talking to them a lot about this and helping them with this in the last few weeks, too.
It'd be nice to simplify all this because so much of it is just like academic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's it, going to that point, they're also going to announce ML.net, a machine learning library for .NET developers.
Oh, that's kind of nice. .NET specific, yeah, because a lot of all of that stuff happens in Python today, right? And not very .NET friendly.
The last thing that I'll touch on here that I've got is, this section is a little, there's some things about opportunities with developers with Microsoft 365 / Office 365. And there's some team stuff being able to have like tabbed sets. So the ability to include your application alongside Edge as a set of applications, maximizing productivity. And this will be really interesting to see how they talk about this and how they show this. I think I know what they're talking about here, but I don't want to go too far on a limb because I couldn't get my question answered. So I'd rather them describe it than me and accurately describe it.
Sure.
But there's a concept with SharePoint and Teams and building an application, but it's going to run inside SharePoint and show up inside Teams as a full tabbed interface.
Gotcha.
You SharePoint framework developers may kind of know where I'm going with this, but I'd really rather them describe it. But I just described it the way they described it to us. But I thought I might have understood it as something different. So
I'm not as close to it as you are. And that to me sounds like a full page app without all the Chrome and then stuffed in a tab in Teams.
Yeah, that sounds that's exactly what I think. That's what it sounded like to me, but I don't want to put words in their mouth until they until they come out. So we'll see.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
And then there's also a concept called adaptive cards. So adaptive cards is more of an industry standard, and there's a lot of support that they're announcing or that's going to be coming out for adaptive cards in Outlook Web Access or Outlook Web App. A lot of interactions you can do there. So a lot of work they've done. The Google guys have been doing a lot of work on that too with Gmail too.
Yeah. Tell you what, building bots is super painful with the card stuff because Slack does it different and Teams does it different and Skype doesn't have any support for it. Skype for Business, I mean. Skype Consumer does. There's team-specific type cards. It's pretty messy, right? It's all over the show. Yeah, adaptivecards.io, I think, is the website for that. And it's a pretty sweet initiative. It just relies on everybody getting on board.
Yep.
We'll have to see if they manage to pull it off.
There was a bunch of other stuff that was announced as well, but I don't think any of it, I'm going to hold back on it because I think it wasn't really cloudy focused. And I think we just went through a bunch of it. So it was more, there was some Windows-ish stuff. There was some UI stuff with Windows and Office. And
gotcha.
But there was nothing for the container side. I thought there was some good news from what I've seen, and there's some interesting stuff if you're a traditional Microsoft developer that was interesting. But beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff that really knocked my socks off too much. There was no like, what's the one big thing? And I didn't really get anything like that.
Interesting. I wonder if they're holding it. Like, I wonder if there's some secret squirrel stuff that's just so secret squirrel, we can't possibly have any leaks. And so that may still come. I don't know.
I get if something tells me that there's something there's an elephant in the room that I don't see.
Yeah, gotcha. So, hey, well, that's interesting that there's no news about bot framework version 4. It may happen next week, I guess, but it doesn't sound like you heard anything about that. Well, that's kind of surprising to me because there's definitely a preview of it kind of sneaking around out there. And I thought they would have made more bot-specific announcements.
The only thing I would say to that is that the briefing was a certain amount of time and they definitely use all the time up. So there very well could be some stuff that was missing because they didn't have enough time to get all the way through it.
Yeah, gotcha. Gotcha. Fair enough. Well, it sounds to be a pretty interesting week. I think the thing that makes me happy about all of those things is that we have a date for the date. AKS.
It's coming and, later.
Yeah, we're going to announce an announcement date. Like, what? Come on now. Well, they're already overdue is basically what this comes down to. They're supposed to be out by May, I believe, end of April, something like that. and or end of March even. It was quite a while. Anyway, so now they're obviously a bit behind on it, but at least they're going to make a decision in the next wee while and tell us when they make a decision. I guess it's not ready till it's ready, right? So there's that. But it's super hard to plan for. Like, we're in this process of like, we've got to get off Docker Cloud and into Kubernetes, and we're going down that path, but I'm going to have to run Kubernetes cluster myself. I just want a managed one. But if AKS isn't ready in time, we're going to have to run our own.
Yeah. So it could be one of those things where you prepare and you end up running your own, and then you run it for just like a month and then switch over.
Yeah. Or just keep running it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, moving around stuff is painful. But yeah. Oh, good wrap up. Like, or good set of announcers. I guess we'll see in the keynote more about these, and also potentially a few other tidbits thrown in.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see a heck of a lot more. I would assume that this is just the tip of the iceberg, but it's a big chunk of ice on that one.
Yeah, fair enough. So what I recommend we do is a couple of SharePoint-related news items. I think looking at our list of bits and pieces here, there's a couple of interesting announcements that I think are worth covering, A, so that people are aware and they don't get stale, but also just because some of them are pretty big. The first one I've got here is about SharePoint storage in SharePoint Online. So there was a big new announcement where's my link gone? I'm looking at the wrong thing, AC. Hold on. I clicked the wrong link. Increase in storage allocation, and here I was looking at the social stuff, which is coming next. Anyway, all right, so increase in online storage allocation. So you know, before it used to be that you got like, I can't remember the formula they used, but it was pretty weird. You got like half a gig per user for each license bought or something like that.
Oh, okay.
You got 1 terabyte plus 0.5 gigabytes per user license. You got an SharePoint Online storage allocation.
Okay.
Anyway, so they're bumping that with a 20-fold increase.
Whoa.
So now, well, here's the rub. You still get your 1 terabyte, but then you get 10 gigs per user as opposed to half a gig per user. So technically, it is a 20x storage bump in the per-user storage that you get, not in the initial 1 terabyte.
That's still pretty big.
So here's some scenarios. If you've got 100 users, you get 1 terabyte as your base allocation. 1 terabyte is your per-user license allocation because it's 100 times 10 gig. And then you get a total allocation of 2 terabytes. That's for 100 users. That's a lot of cat photos.
It is a lot of cat photos. Yeah. Those many animated ones.
Or in Spence Harbar's world, that's a bunch of beautiful Scotland landscapes photos. Yeah.
Fighters.
Yeah, or fighter jets. Yeah. Or rivers and things like that. He's got some beautiful photos. Anyway, so there's a big increase in SharePoint Online storage. Not quite sure what's motivating it. They say they're listening to customers as they're putting more and more content into SharePoint. I guess so.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I have one SharePoint one, and this one is, we've been sitting on this one now for, I guess, nearly a month now, but I'm waiting to talk about it. There are April 2018 release of SharePoint scripts, site scripts and site designs. These are things that make it easier, like the way we used to be able to create sites using like templates and using like site definitions and declarative ways of doing it. This is a much more programmatic way and a much more reliable way of going through and provisioning your sites. In this update they did in April 2018, they've announced that it's a bunch of new actions or site script actions and scripts that enable you to further configure automatically the newly created site collections for your employees and will reduce the requirements for having external services integrated with the provisioning process. So what they do is they've given us things like things around site settings to set regional settings or external sharing capabilities, things around lists and libraries about creating site columns, adding site columns, creating content types, adding views, apps and solutions. You can install a SharePoint framework solution and associate an extension that's coming soon. And other things like triggering a flow, joining a hub, and stuff like that. As far as the new script templates that are available to us, we have templates for things like a lot of stuff I just mentioned. So installing a SharePoint framework solution, applying external sharing settings for a site, regional settings, creating advanced lists, using a SharePoint field XML definition, and then also triggering a flow and writing back the site properties to a SharePoint list when you want to do stuff like that. So these are definitely like the best approach for provisioning assets inside of SharePoint or provisioning sites when you're going through and getting stuff, trying to create artifacts inside SharePoint. It's a lot more reliable, a lot easier to work with these than it was using the feature XML framework than what we had before.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a big deal for enterprises trying to manage the sprawl and sort of governance of all their SharePoint sites and stuff.
Absolutely.
So those are things they're giving you. Let's talk a little bit about things they're taking away. So they're doing some rationalization of social features in SharePoint. And I give them credit. At least they're taking something away. They seem to keep adding things and causing more confusion between Yammer and SharePoint and all that sort of stuff over the years. It's been a long, long way, of course. Anyway, so they're doing some rationalizations. So our good friend Bill Bayer from Microsoft came out with a post saying, in June 2018, we're making some changes to the native social capabilities in SharePoint Online, a.k.a. we're turning some stuff off. It's really funny because you can see that the structure of this post is hilarious. Three paragraphs of, we've got all this wonderful stuff, we've got all this wonderful stuff. Fourth paragraph, by the way, we're changing some stuff and we're taking some stuff away. And so what they're announcing is that in June 2018, they're making the company feed read-only in SharePoint Online. So you know the news feed feature?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to go, I think it's going bye-byes, basically. So they're going to make it read-only, and you won't be able to provision them, or you won't be able to implement the newsfeed feature and navigation through the tenant administration after that date. Now, as far as I can see, they don't give a date for when the thing is going away, but I suspect there'll be another announcement about that. And apparently this is causing some consternation, because they're basically saying that Office 365 has two options for enterprise social, right? They've got Yammer and the SharePoint newsfeed, and they're basically saying Yammer's better for it.
You know, it's interesting you say that too, because we actually got a comment from one of our listeners by Christian. He sent us an email on April the 23rd asking for us to hear our take on the removal of the SharePoint newsfeed. In his opinion, so I'm reading this from the email. He says, in my own opinion, there's no easy nor good enough option to replace this kind of a social feed. Yammer is still poorly integrated into SharePoint. Mm. So you're right. It is causing some issues here with people. Christian, I don't have an opinion on it. I don't have a feeling on it, because to be honest, I don't use any of the Yammer integration or the SharePoint newsfeed stuff, any of the social capabilities with SharePoint. So I don't have much experience there or really know many people that are using it. I'm not saying it's not being used, and just that's just not in my circles. And so I don't really have an opinion so much on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't use them either, but I'm never short of an opinion, right? I think these features are really old. They started to be built in SharePoint 2010, I believe.
Yep.
It was the first version that we started seeing these social features coming out in SharePoint. And SharePoint sort of did it for themselves and in a very half-baked way, right? So there's a bunch of features that have gone missing over the time. It's pretty poorly implemented behind the scenes from what I understand. I'm no expert on it, but from what I understand. And so now, it doesn't surprise me Microsoft no longer want to support these things or add features to this area, right? Also, the SharePoint and Yammer teams are pretty close now, all managed by the same people. So it's no surprise where they want to put their eggs, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And they might want to make the integration better, but with things like communication sites and Yammer and stuff like that, trying to bring them together and with new experiences seems like a more sort of future-full approach in my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly doesn't surprise me that this is what they want to do. But like anything, right, when you take away stuff, it causes pain. And I suspect they've done a little review and gone, we've got this much MAU, right, monthly active usage of the SharePoint news feed. We've got this many tenants that use it. We've got this many customers that don't. And that the numbers sort of paint a picture. They're probably looking at it going, well, this is not a highly used feature. I suspect, I don't really have any numbers to back this up or any inside knowledge on this, right? But I suspect they're looking at it going, it's a pain in the ass to manage and maintain. It doesn't have a future because it's not where our strategic vision is for social features across Office 365. And there's just not that many people that use it. So I could be totally wrong on that last point. There could be lots and lots, but when I was at Microsoft and we turned off auto-hosted apps or deprecated them first and then turned them off, we looked really carefully at the data and looked at exactly which tenants were using auto-hosted. Even though it never came out of preview, it was heavily, heavily used by a small number of tenants, right? Mm-hmm. And so We reached out to each one of those tenants individually and talked to them about alternatives and got them off it. And there was just a massive long tail of tenants that you could tell they were dabbling with it, but not really doing anything with it serious. But there were, you know, probably 50 tenants that were, you could tell were in hardcore production using auto-hosted apps. And so we had to go chat with them all individually and be like, do you know that you're using this? And they're like, no. Or I remember one in particular was like, oh yeah, that's the stock ticker on our front page of our intranet. And so they had an auto-hosted app that was doing a stock ticker on their intranet page, and their intranet page was set to the homepage for every user in the organization. It was a big company. It was like a couple hundred thousand users. So they all come in the morning and boom, auto-hosted app goes absolutely psycho crazy because everybody's hitting it, and that's where all the usage was coming from. They were one of the top users. Yep.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I hope they're looking at the data behind this one.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
It sounds like they're going to make it read-only. They're going to watch the trend go down on usage and then eventually cut you off.
I have a non-SharePoint thing here.
Yeah, finish this up with a non-SharePointy thing.
So this one's kind of cool. So have you noticed that in a lot of the Microsoft Docs pages, like docs.microsoft.com, have you noticed the commenting system has changed?
I haven't, no.
All right, so I like it. I have a little bit of concern with it, but I like it generally. Frankly, I really like it so much, I want to put it on my site. Instead of where before they were using, I think, Livefire, which is kind of like a discuss like port. Effectively, you're outsourcing your comments for posts. Well, what they did is that now the SharePoint docs are doing this. A lot of the docs are doing this across docs.microsoft.com. Is that now in order to leave a comment, you have to be logged into GitHub. You have to have a GitHub account. So now when you leave a comment, what it's actually doing is it's going to create an issue inside of an issue list inside of a repo. There's some metadata that adds along with your issue, so it knows how to link it back to the actual page. And then you can have a full-on conversation and threaded conversation with the whole thumbs up, thumbs down, happy, heart, party time emojis and stuff. Hmm. You can have a full-on conversation on that issue inside of GitHub. And when an issue gets closed and saying, yes, we've resolved this question, and they say, yes, you know, the issue is now closed, it shows up in a different tab. So you can see closed issues and you can see open issues. So it's nice because it's effectively comments are being logged as issues being submitted to a GitHub issue list. It's not going in just one issue list. Each section of the docs get to choose where they're going to put their, what issue list is going to be tied to. So I really like it. I've used it in a couple different places and I really do like it. The one thing I'm a little concerned about though is that when it comes to SharePoint documentation, we have one repo where customers are posting bugs that they think that they found. Yeah. Customers are posting questions where for stuff. And now we're seeing all the comments from the docs going into the same repo. And so when you have a real bug that you need to post in there, things are getting really swamped. And so you're finding that this one repo is getting really, really busy. I mean, it was already busy before. But I mean, it is real busy. And I'm jumping over. So the repo is the SP Dev Docs list. And they've done some work recently where they look at old issues where there's been no activity on those issues for a certain number of days. And they effectively, if the issue is not currently being tracked or has it logged as like a bug or something like that or a question, and they're just kind of waiting for someone to follow up, then the issue is closed. But they drop a comment on the issue saying, if you think this is an error, open up a new issue, reference this one, we'll keep the conversation going, but it's not so much one that they want to leave them open. We're still looking at over 350 issues just in the SharePoint Dev Docs, and you know, a good number of these issues are just docs. I mean, it's just, if I did a filter just on the label area colon docs, which is what they get tagged as when they're submitted by the through the website, through the documentation, it's almost a good solid one third of all the issues that are open right now are just from docs being posted as comments on the SharePoint docs.
Yeah, so gotcha.
It's a little bit of a concern. I mean, to me, I think it would have made more sense to have it in a separate repo, but
yeah, because issues are not really for conversation, you know.
Right now, they're using this issue list as the place to ask questions too. So, to that respect, I get it because we're telling people to use Stack Overflow, and some people are, but the SharePoint team seems to be tracking stuff inside of a GitHub issue list as the one place to track stuff. So
yeah, gotcha.
It's pretty interesting what they've done. It's pretty cool.
Hey, I've got a slightly separate little sort of thing. It's not really news. I guess it is kind of news. about personnel changes at Microsoft.
Ooh.
I haven't put the links in here, but I will for the show notes.
But I know what you're
there's two. One is a Kiwi guy. Are you familiar with JSON.net?
I am.
The founder of JSON.net is a guy from Wellington, where I grew up, called James Newton King, and he's joined Microsoft.
No kidding.
Yep. So he's working in the ASP.NET team. He's joined Microsoft as a principal software engineer. Now, I believe he's staying in Wellington, and he's not moving from New Zealand, but he's a remote member of the team. What's interesting about this is I kind of felt like this was coming because a lot of things in the Microsoft.NET world or Microsoft dev tools world and all that take a dependency on JSON.NET.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft gets pretty, they get pretty twitchy about taking dependencies on things that they don't own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that they now own JSON.NET, but they certainly control the head of it.
They have a lot more influence.
James, if you're listening to this, I'm not saying you're under the master control of the overlords, but I'm just saying, Microsoft depend pretty heavily now on JSON.NET, and I'm sure this will make people feel quite a lot more comfortable about that with James working at the mothership.
Yep.
So, hey, congratulations, James, on moving to Microsoft. I mean, he's made an amazing library that millions of developers use. I use it almost every day. I use JSON.NET Schema as well, the schema, the JSON schema version for managing JSON documents and stuff, and they're really great. So, yeah.
I suspect there's a lot of people that are using it that don't even know they're using it because, when you did...
Absolutely.
Let's go back into the SharePoint space. Remember Workflow Manager? If you looked at all the assemblies, all the binaries that were installed, JSON.NET was one that was used. And, mm-hmm. It says something, too. It says something quite telling when when the .NET framework had a JSON serializer, but JSON.NET was so much better and that Microsoft was choosing a third-party one over the one that they had already built themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, much more active. He's been working on it for years. Really smart cookie. And, cool move. The other one is Rob Eisenberg. You know Rob?
Mm-hmm.
The founder of Durandal and...
Aurelia.
Aurelia, that's the one. Yeah. Yep. Also, Caliburn Micro.
Yep.
Yep. Caliburn and Caliburn Micro, I believe, as well. So he has left Microsoft.
That wasn't a very long stint, was it?
1 year, 6 months.
Yep.
Yep. So he's off to Envision, working on, it says on his LinkedIn, I work across the entire engineering organization at Envision to help solve the company's most challenging problems. So I don't really know what he's doing. But anywho, he's moved on from Microsoft.
I've got one more for you.
Okay.
You know this one.
Go for it.
So the Azure AD team.
Oh, God. No, this is straight to the heart.
This one was very disappointing. So you guys, our listeners may be familiar with them. They may have heard us use this name before. But there was a gentleman who used to work on the Azure AD team. He was a mainstay on the Azure AD. He was the face of Azure AD. And you could trust everything he said. He was not only that, he was one of the two people at Microsoft that I would always seek out at a conference and be like, I don't care what he's talking about. I'm going to go watch him speak.
Yeah.
And Vittorio Bertolucci, I think that's right. Yeah. Bertolucci.
You get between us, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So Victoria, I'm sorry.
He recently left Microsoft. He joined Auth0, which I mean, it's a huge move. It's a great move for him, but it was a big disappointment to see him go. It's a big disappointment in multiple levels. I was disappointed for the Azure AD team because I thought that they lost one of their best champions. It was really disappointing too because I have not talked to him about his move, but the next two things I'm going to say kind of go hand in hand, but it sure seems to me like the Azure AD team is like the team of two things. They don't ever seem to finish anything. And then they get stuck on what they're going to do. We've got two things. We have two app registration portals. We have two SDKs between MSAL and ADAL.js. And we have two endpoints. We have V1 and V2. And none of them replace each other.
Yeah. There's bits you want from both and all of them.
It is such a complete shit show. And you know what's so frustrating about it too? What's sodium frustrating about too is it's been like this for almost 2 years. And when you sit down and talk to anybody from the team and they start asking you questions, it's the same questions that you're getting
from
year after year. And it's like, you guys have got, you got to finish it. You got to, sorry for the phrase, you got to shit or get off the pot.
Yeah.
V2 has got to be updated. You got to do the stuff that we do in V1 has got to get migrated over to V2.
Yeah.
And we've already started moving this direction. You got to ditch A.js and you got to make MSAL do everything that A.js did.
Yeah.
And you got to have one registration portal.
Same with the app model, V1 and V2 yes. apps, right? I don't know about you, but at Hyperfish, we've got like 4 different app IDs for different things because of issues between V1 and V2.
Yep.
So like V2, you need to do V2 if you want dynamic consent, right? Being able to add scopes to the consent you've already got for an app. Can't do that with admin apps. Can't do that with app-only apps either in V2. So you still got to have admin apps or admin-only client credential flow-based apps.
Yeah.
Then you can have regular apps, the regular ones with dynamic consent for users. And then, but some endpoints are available only on the V1 stuff and not on the V2 stuff. So it's like, man, I want the bits from over there mashed with the bits from here and the bits from here and then stick it all in one big melting pot and make it into perfection.
It's so frustrating.
It's a huge loss for the team with Vittorio leaving. But honestly, like, yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me either. It's just hugely like disappointing. It's hugely disappointing. It's disappointing for the situation. I'm not disappointed in Vittorio. But I mean, on the personal level, I'm disappointed because I'm not going to see him at every, you know, at a build or at an Ignite.
Yeah, you will.
It's not a guarantee that I'm going to see him speaking of those things. And he's the guy that you'd always want to go talk to about this stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Anyway. He is the dude. It'll be interesting to see what he goes and does at Auth0. He's joined as a principal architect. I suspect they're wanting to grow up into the enterprise a bit more than they are right now. And he's the key to that, or a big part of that.
He's the one I would go for. I mean, he's definitely got the reputation for it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
See how I said, hey, and then I left you all hanging and then you went to a sponsor? It made you listen, right? Yeah. Gotcha. Anyway, you're back now. Are you ready for some picks, AC?
We'll do I'm ready.
Because you look like you're about to die on the vine.
No, I'm good. I'm awake. I am tired, though. Yeah.
Cool.
I won't be upset when we call it.
Fair enough, yeah. You want to kick things off with a pick, or should I go first?
I can do the first one. I think our third one is the one I'm most excited to share.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Okay, so my first one is, if you want to read the longest Wired article ever, go click on my pick. It's called The Young and the Reckless. It's the subtitle, A Gang of Teen Hackers Snatched the Keys to Microsoft's Video Game Empire and Then They Went Too Far. This is epic, CJ. Make sure you have time to read this. And when I say time, go to the site and then start scrolling a little bit and you'll see how long the scroll bar is or how small the scroll bar is and how slowly it moves. It's a long article.
Great.
Effectively, so I'm going to give it to you in the shortest explanation I can give it to you. This goes all the way back to Xbox, not Xbox 360, but Xbox, where these kids figured out how to reverse engineer. They hacked and found that the Xbox team and the original Xbox screwed up and left the decryption keys in memory for the decryption stuff that needed to happen for games. And they were able to get in and do like side loading of their own stuff on the Xbox and create special cheat codes. Then they figured out how to do the exact same thing with the 360 and the Xbox One, and even went so far as to have someone break into the Microsoft offices and steal two Durangos, which were the dev kits for Xbox One. And they were able to build like mods inside of games so that you could play things like Call of Duty and have like Flash Gordon mode where you could run as fast as you could across the screen and run through buildings. You could do, whenever you shot your gun, your bullets always found, they traced straight to your target. You didn't even have to aim. Yeah. And they sold these hacks for like $8,000 or something. The amount of money that people paid for this stuff. These kids made tons of money. Next thing they know, one of them ended up dead. And CJ, you got to go read. It's an epic story. And it's
fantastic.
The guys that got busted didn't get busted all that long ago. I think they got busted in like 3 or 4 years ago, something like that.
And how come this news is just coming out recently? Is this new news? I didn't hear about this.
I remember reading something about it, but the story wasn't very, it's like a New York Times story where it wasn't really detailed. And then Wired went through and was like, let's go through and tell the whole story. And it was epic.
That's amazing.
Yeah. A friend of mine from the MS IT Pro Cloud show, Ben Stedjink, actually posted this in the Slack group. I'm in with him. He warned me, he's like, this is incredibly long. And sure enough, it's incredibly long, but it's great.
Speaking of another long post, but practically achievable in a one sitting in comparison to that, I've got another article which is far more serious. It is called, Is There a Fix for Imposter Syndrome? Do you know what imposter syndrome is?
No.
It's pretty common. I'm going to balk up all the words here, but it's basically a psychological disorder or I don't even know what the right word is to use here. It's a psychological situation that you get yourself into where you basically don't believe that you deserve the role that you've got and that you're sort of faking it. You know, that you're an imposter in your job or in your profession or your skill level or what have you.
According to Wikipedia, it's a psychological pattern in which people doubt their accomplishments and have a persistent and often internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud.
Oh, absolutely. I have absolutely felt this way a number of times in my career, right? And
it's justified for you.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
God, I couldn't resist.
No, you know, you should totally poke fun at me whenever possible. I like it. But, you know, it's something that's not really super commonly talked about, but it's becoming more and more talked about that it's kind of like it's a thing that a lot of people suffer from is like, you think like, oh God, I hope people don't ask the wrong questions or I'm going to be exposed as a fraud or like, how can I possibly get this job? Like, there's no way I'm going to get through this interview or what have you. Anyway, this article goes and talks in more depth about imposter syndrome. And I think it's pretty widespread in our industry as something people struggle with from time to time. And it sort of makes these different categories of, they've got different types of, different kinds of imposter syndrome. You can call, the first one is the expert. The next one is the perfectionist. The other one is the superwoman / man, the natural genius and the rugged individualist. And there's all these sort of different facets to it. But I found it fascinating because there's a number of people that I've, met and worked with and things where you just like, you're really, really good at what you do, but you don't believe it.
Yeah.
And you can sort of tell which bucket they fall into. Anyway, it's an interesting read. I'm not going to cover all of it here, but it talks about the research that's gone on around it and all that sort of stuff. And definitely interesting.
I'm going to bookmark that one. I'm going to pocket that one to go read that later. That's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of a bit different for our picks, but if you're into that sort of stuff, definitely go take a read. Why don't you wrap us up with an epic pick?
Okay, so behind the scenes, let's peel back the curtain a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. How's the podcast come to fruition? CJ and I are the talent that you get to hear, but the real talent is with the person that actually takes the work that we do, sends it off to our producer, and does everything else to publish it.
I tell you what, AC, you've got a face for radio, my friend. Or podcasts. I'm just messing with you.
No, yeah, you're true. Here we go. So the person, and you may have heard us refer to him in the past, but the person that produces the show is Marco. It used to be Rade. Rade has moved on, and now it's Marco. Marco used to work with Rade. Well, the person that actually handles the between AC and CJ to Marco and then back right into your ears is my wife. Meredith is the one that actually does all the behind the scenes work for this.
She's our chief operating officer.
She's our chief operating officer, and she's the one that CJ and I actually work for. We know exactly who we work for.
That's right.
She sends me this link the other day, and she's like, you guys have to put this on the show as one of your show notes. And I'm like, oh, we totally are, but it's all yours. This is, I just got to read the title. Photos of Kentucky Fried Chicken as Fiery Explosions. The very first picture is the space shuttle launching, but it's an arrangement of KFC like fried chicken with the lighting just perfect that you kind of have to stare at it for a second and go,
Are those the real clouds?
Yeah, those, is it chicken or are those clouds?
It's chicken.
There's a dragster that's doing the same thing where you have chicken coming out the back of it. There is, I think it's the Spice Girls.
No, that's the Avengers, dude.
Oh, it is, my bad. Oh man, I'm way off it. And then there's also
that's the Avengers.
And then there's a volcano eruption that is, it's not as fiery. I guess up close, it's probably pretty damn fiery. But
maybe that's the Power Rangers. Maybe I'm getting my superheroes mixed up.
Hey, I went with Spice Girls. You're on the cast. Yeah.
So you think chicken and photos, what are these guys on about? But go check out the pic. It's hilarious. It's like,
it's really good.
God, that looks so realistic. It's amazing.
You have to, the one with the Spice Girls, Power Rangers, or Avengers, whatever it is, that one and the space shuttle one are really, really good.
So this was done as a KFC ad campaign by the looks of it.
Yep. It's a KFC hot and spicy.
Wow. Man, really, that's awesome.
It's really well done.
Excellent. Hey, well, good show, AC. Thanks for hanging in there late at night on the East Coast and surviving the show mostly intact. We only really lost it once.
Yeah, it was pretty early on, too.
Yeah. So hopefully everybody learned a bunch about Build and a few of these news and announcements that have come out. We will be trickling out the interviews that I do at Build over the next few weeks and things, so stay tuned for much more sort of in-depth news and reviews, so to speak, over from the Build week. But we will talk to you all again next week.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you again, CJ.
You too, man. Go to sleep.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.